Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Happy Martin Luther King Day to all. Jim Garrity off today. Charlie Cook of National Review in taking his place. Charlie, it's good to have you with us.
It's great to be here.
We'll start here with the big news from the presidential campaign, and that's the fact that John Huntsman, who said last Tuesday night he had a ticket to ride from New Hampshire to South Carolina after he invested so much in New Hampshire and came in a solid but distant third place. Today he had a much different tone as he dropped out of the race and threw his support in what some may consider a pretty surprising direction. Take a listen.
Today, I am suspending my campaign for the presidency. I believe it is now time for our party to unite around the candidate best equipped to defeat Barack Obama. Despite our differences and the space between us on some of the issues, I believe that candidate is Governor Mitt Romney.
I'm sure a lot of conservatives everywhere are just awash in tears today, Charlie, that John Huntsman, the guy who tried his sense of humor at a couple of different debates that did not go over well, was bouncing along the bottom at 1% or worse in many of the national polls. A lot of folks thought he was running in the wrong primary, should have been in the Democratic primary.
Right.
Ultimately, he didn't have a bad record. He just seemed to be running to the left of everybody, at least on taxes and so forth, during his time as governor of Utah. But his time in the Obama administration certainly didn't help his cause either. So I'm guessing that you and other conservatives over at National Review there aren't exactly sorry to see him go either.
I'm not really sorry to see him go. I mean, as you say, he doesn't actually have a terrible record. And if you put his politics on paper, he's not particularly liberal. He has a good pro-life record. His economic plan wasn't too bad. But the thing is, he came across badly. I mean, he was sanctimonious and he wasn't funny. I mean, Ronald Reagan was actually pretty hilarious. You can buy CDs of, you know, Ronald Reagan's humor. And I think if you're going to try and be funny in politics, you pretty much have to succeed. The other thing is, Huntsman had an annoying way of apologizing for the right. And I think conservatives are fed up with that. We have a president who apologizes for America. So in some ways, he sort of almost ran away from his own politics and was desperate to please the left and the middle. And nobody wins elections or hearts by doing that.
It's interesting that he spent almost his entire campaign savaging Mitt Romney in what at many different times, especially during debates, seemed to be very personal, since both have Utah connections. So maybe there's some bad blood going way back. But the instant he gets out, the guy who he says couldn't be trusted in a lot of different ways, all of a sudden is the perfect choice to replace him as the choice for Republicans in this year's campaign.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. A senior campaign official today said, and I quote, "Governor Huntsman did not want to stand in the way of the candidate best prepared to beat Barack Obama." Well, he did yesterday. he said, you know, Romney was completely unelectable. He said that on CNBC. And he had two websites up that were anti-Romney. He had a whole range of YouTube videos that were anti-Romney. Overnight, both websites have gone down and all the videos have been moved to private. So I'm not quite sure what's happened. I thought about a week ago that what Romney should really do is ring him up, say, "I will make you, I don't know, Secretary of State, Ambassador to China, just get the hell out of the race," because it does help Romney. He'd almost looked as if he'd put himself in a position where he couldn't endorse Romney. I mean, it would, a little bit like Newt Gingrich turning around now and saying, "Yeah, I was only kidding. This guy is the one."
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. I also feel bad for the folks at the state newspaper in South Carolina, the biggest newspaper in the state. And the second they endorse John Huntsman is the second that it breaks online that he's no longer going to stay in the race. So I'm wondering if they're going to have a little bit of a recalculation there as well.
Well, it's like Newsmax. Newsmax ran an entire edition about Herman Cain, and it came out after he'd pulled out. It's so difficult making editorial decisions in this climate, but perhaps you could argue that Herman Cain's withdrawal was less predictable. When you're looking at a man who's running at 1% in South Carolina, it's a strange thing to endorse him.
Yeah, if you enjoyed bad Nirvana jokes and enjoyed being called anti-science conservatives, well, it's a sad day for you. But for the rest of conservatives, it's a pretty darn good day that far left or far right podium on the stage will no longer be occupied by John Huntsman.
This is true.
Starting tonight in the Fox News Wall Street Journal debate. On to martini number two now, Charlie. And Harry Reid, you know, we love him on the Three Martini Lunch. In fact, Jim has coined the phrase, way to go, Nevada, way to go, for reelecting him last year when they had a great chance to shoot him down. Harry Reid was on Meet the Press with an extended interview with David Gregory on Sunday, and Harry Reid is a frustrated man because even though he still is majority leader, darn it, he can't get past filibusters anymore thanks to the 2010 elections, and so he has just decided to label Republicans as obstructionists. But take a listen to what his number one example of that is and what he's so frustrated about.
But understand that we've had obstructionism on steroids. The Republican leader, my counterpart, Mitch McConnell, said his number one goal at the beginning of this Congress was to defeat President Obama, not have him reelected. And that's how they've legislated. We've spent months on things that used to happen just matter-of-factly. Raising the debt ceiling. We did it for President Reagan 18 times, and we spent 2.5 months doing that.
Charlie, you know, for a party that's trying to get back into the good graces of independence and so forth, don't you think he would have mentioned something about jobs, about, you know, a Democratic idea that Republicans didn't like in that area, or something other than why were they so upset about us trying to add $1 trillion in additional borrowing to our to our national debt? If tone deaf is it has a picture next to it in the dictionary, I think Harry Reid's picture might be there.
This is actually one of the things that really drives me nuts. It's my pet peeve, if you like. Because what it does is it gives you a great insight into the way in which Harry Reid and people like him think, which is that the role of the federal government is always to be doing something, and the only legitimate question is what. So they only consider that Republicans are doing their job and behaving properly when there is a bill which both sides agree on, and they're debating what's going to be part of it. The moment that one party or one group says, you know, I don't think this is a good idea, there's this charge of obstructionism. Well, actually, obstructionism is precisely what opposition parties are there to achieve, especially in a country which has far too much government now, like the United States, and a party which nominally, at least, is against big government. The system isn't broken. The Republicans aren't being obstructionists because they don't agree with Harry Reid. And the way he was speaking there, you would think that he was asking for, you know, a million-dollar raise in a debt ceiling, which was really par for the course. This is $1 trillion. This is what, one quarter of all spending?
Right.
One quarter of the GDP. This is a huge amount of money. It really does give you an insight into the way they think, because politics is division. That's what it's about. The Republicans are allowed to say no, much as the Democrats were allowed to say no in the you know, 2005, for example. And Harry Reid was one of those people who said, look at the Senate, look at the filibustering. This is a patriotic act. We're going to stop what the incumbent party wanted to do. Well, the minute conservatives say no, then they're somehow treasonable and destroying the republic.
Yeah, and then he went on later in this same quote to talk about how Republicans were opposed to the payroll tax extension, when in fact they actually wanted a year-long payroll tax extension rather than the two-month deal that a lot of Republicans thought was a political gimmick on the part of the Democrats. So the only problem was that Mitch McConnell and John Boehner couldn't agree on what the opposition strategy was, so Republicans did look pretty bad in that situation. But Harry Reid once again proving that he and Democrats are perfectly fine watching this debt skyrocket and are only upset when folks try to get in the way of that. On to martini number three here, Charlie, and Newsweek magazine. Let's be honest, they don't really have much of a circulation anymore. Nobody really pays any attention to them anymore. But there's still, I think, at least a shred of an effort over there to sort of try to convince people that they're not completely given to the liberal side of things. I'm not sure how many people still believe that, but a picture of Obama on the cover this week with the headline, "Why Are Obama's Critics So Dumb?" And then the subhead inside the magazine, "The right calls him a socialist, the left says he sucks up to Wall Street, and independents think he's a wimp. Andrew Sullivan on how the president may just end up outsmarting them all." Well, basically that tells me that nobody seems to like him, and the only way that he's going to quote-unquote outsmart them is to really demonize Mitt Romney or whoever else ends up being the nominee.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't obviously read the article. That Newsweek released a paragraph from it. What essentially Andrew Sullivan says is that he says, and I quote, "Obama has delivered in a way that the unhinged right and purist left have yet to understand or absorbed." And then he goes on to describe how he's done this, essentially describing Obama's tactics. But let's just suppose for a moment that Obama is a tactical genius. That firstly doesn't make him right. And secondly, doesn't mean that his opponents are stupid. there are a lot of people who've been tactically brilliant in history. It certainly doesn't mean that those who were against them were wrong. Secondly, I mean, Obama, I'm not convinced the way in which he gets things done is particularly praiseworthy. He's broke every campaign promise that he made. Obamacare was passed in a fairly specious way, and some of it comes down basically to lying. Newsweek is in the tank. I mean, Newsweek ran a headline recently saying we're all socialists now. They explain the incompetence of this administration by asking, is the modern presidency too much for one man to handle? Well, maybe if we shrunk government, it wouldn't be. But I mean, Andrew Sullivan, I think, has gone off the reservation, and this is another example of it.
I think a lot of people are either ignoring it completely, which is probably what we would recommend, or just shaking their head at a very partisan analysis. But a magazine that once was pretty influential, and even if people didn't agree with it, they paid attention to it, is plummeting into oblivion. And I think this is another example of why that's probably the best thing for everyone.
It's a little bit like, you know YouTube comments. I mean, you could put a video on YouTube about anything, absolutely anything. You could put a video of your daughter playing in the garden, and within an hour, the comments will have descended into Nazis and left versus right and arguments about religion. And it's some people, I imagine that YouTube almost pay trolls just to go around and flamethrow. That magazine cover looks exactly like that. I mean, it's almost as if the cover has been written by a YouTube commenter who just wanted to start a stupid argument. And perhaps if their sales are plummeting, that's exactly what's happened. They sort of won a one-week hit. You know?
Well, if a stupid argument is what they were looking for, that might have actually been a success. But we'll find out as the week goes on if this has any traction. My guess is it won't, so we'll leave it there as well. Charlie, thanks so much for pinch hitting for Jim Garrity, and we'll talk to you later.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Charlie Cook of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Tuesday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us then for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.